Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. We're your hosts, Alistair Cross and Tamara Thorne. Thank you for joining us. Tonight, we have with us, returning to the studio, Andrew Niederman, who is one of our favorite guests, one of our favorite authors, one of our favorite people. Andrew Niederman was born in Brooklyn. His family moved to the Catskills of New York when he was an infant. He is a graduate of State University of Albany, where he received his master's in English. He taught at Fallsburg High School for 23 years before leaving to pursue his career as a novelist and screenwriter. As a teacher, he served as a department chairman, faculty president, county teachers association president, director of dramatics, and wrestling coach, which I didn't know. He has been married for 44 years to the former Diane Wilson of Fallsburg, and they have two children, Melissa, a teacher at the Palm Valley School in Rancho Mirage, California, and Eric, a private commercial jet pilot. The Niedermans have three grandchildren. Currently, Mr. Niederman is working on the stage musical version of The Devil's Advocate within the Queen Williams Management Agency in London. We'll be talking about that tonight, as well as his latest novel. Well, there's two. The Incident, written under Andrew Niederman, and the V.C. Andrews long-awaited sequel to My Sweet Audrina, which is called White Fern. So, without further ado, please welcome Andrew Niederman. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Hi, welcome. Thanks. I'll just make a couple of quick corrections for you.
No.
I've got to catch up. actually, I've been married 52 years this last February.
Oh, wow.
And I'm glad you mentioned Fallsburg High School, because the very end of my trip, which took me through England and Italy and then to New York City, ended up being at Fallsburg High School, where I taught, because I was inducted into their Hall of Fame. So what I did was an event to raise money for the scholarship fund. And it was very well attended, and I saw students, can't call them kids anymore, who I hadn't seen for literally 35, 40, 50, in some cases 50 years. It was quite an experience.
Wow, nice.
And a crowning moment in my career and life.
Nice.
So I was grateful for that, and from there we moved on.
Very nice.
I'm not really, actually, where we are working on the musical, because there's always rewrites, but we have firmly contracted with South Korea, a major production company there, to produce the premiere in the world market in Seoul, South Korea. It'll probably be 2018, because, as you know, developing a musical is it's not an overnight thing. It takes quite a while.
Yeah.
But
right.
We have the libretto written by myself and a dramatist in England who directs and produces, Julian Wolford. And our composer is Richard John, who is now the music director at this moment of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory on the West End. Very accomplished man. So we bring a lot of years of experience to the project and a lot of enthusiasm.
Nice.
Very
That's
excited.
Great.
And you just got back from a very long and you just got back from a trip where you went all over the place. How was it?
It was great. I mean, London itself is, well, I'm published in London by two publishers. One is Simon & Schuster United Kingdom, UK, which covers about 85 territories. So it's quite a big publishing venture. And I'm also published there by Severin House, which is the which published me this last month with The Incident. So there are two publishers there, and then, of course, there's the meeting with your agent in London, meeting with your co-team workers on the musical. So that was important, and we reviewed a lot of our music and the lyrics, and we're happy with what we've got. And from there, we took a vacation portion in rural England, which I can recommend to everybody. It's just a wonderful part of England. We were near a town called Turnbridge Wells, and it's a whole different view of England, and I think it's important to see it. The people are really down to earth, and it was fascinating being there. Of course, the other fascinating part of it was that they were all reliving this Brexit vote, and the area we were at, which was Kent, was predominantly for staying in the EU, so they were worried about what would happen as a result. And there are a lot of results of the Brexit vote, and many of that impact on publishing, actually. So that'll be an interesting thing, because you have to remember that the pound has fallen considerably, and so the royalties for writers who publish in the UK are going to change, and their ability to make deals outside of the UK has dramatically changed. So that's all very interesting stuff, but we'll have to wait and see what happens in the next few months before we do anything there. From there, we went on to Italy, and I have an Italian producer, Andrea Di Liberetto, who's trying to produce an older novel of mine entitled Amnesia, and he's mulling through some directors right now, and we'll see where that goes, but that's also quite an exciting project for us.
Oh, yes.
And then on the way back, we had to go to, of course, we stopped in New York for meetings with Simon Schuster, meetings with my producers on Broadway who have contracted to do my stage play of Flowers in the Attic. And so we went over, set the groundwork for a rewrite. You always have to rewrite. A lot of people don't understand that when a play is contracted, that's really the beginning of a very long process. Because after the rewrite occurs, if it's what we want, we will then have what we call an actor's reading, which professionals will read that script, sometimes with a director involved, and notes will be taken, and another rewrite will be done based on that reading.
Mm-hmm.
And then that rewrite will be offered to regional theaters who perform, hopefully it'll perform there. And again, notes will be taken, and another rewrite will be done, and then it'll be brought into New York City proper. So
nice.
And project when that'll all come to fruition, but you can get an idea of what's involved in the work.
That sounds fascinating.
You have been a very busy
exciting
guy.
You know, you've got to be able to put your ego back, because you know, there are a lot of people involved in production of a play, just like there are in a movie, and there are a lot of opinions. So you have to navigate through all that and hopefully come up with a product that everybody enjoys.
Right. How do you like that kind of writing, a movie script, play, compared to writing by yourself, you know, writing your book and not worrying about it?
Well, they really are two different things, and you're right about saying yourself, because when you write a novel, you have just yourself and your characters, basically. I mean, eventually you'll have an editor involved, some feedback, but basically it's really your baby. When you're involved with a movie or with a play, you have committees. You have, and some of the major parts of that become the actors, and the director, and everybody has their view of or their interpretation of the storyline and how it should go, and you have to navigate through that and basically compromise sometimes and try to see it from another point of view. If you're locked into your own point of view and you don't want to move, nothing will happen with your project, because unless you have such power that you can bulldoze producers, and directors, and actors, and studios. And there are very few, probably a handful, that can do that kind of thing. And nobody knows if that's good for them anyway. You know, these people do have some impact and some intelligence, so you have to keep an open mind and try to do what some people suggest and take another view of it. The other thing about it is I'm not every day in theater. People who are in the theater, that's their life and their daily work, have a better insight into what goes on the stage and how you should construct the play. So you do have to pay attention to that, because if you walk in without that kind of thing, then you'll be in trouble. I was very fortunate in my life because, first, I taught film for 20 years. So I understood the difference between a film script and a novel, and what went into the production of a film. I was very aware of it, and for that reason, I was never feared on the set. Most novelists are not even invited to the movie set because they're afraid they're going to say, oh, this isn't my book, or you're destroying my character, and then that turns out to be very negative, especially if it's out to the public, and that hurts the box office of the film. So if you have an understanding of why your book is going to be reduced to 120 script pages and why some of the big scenes that you like are not going to be done for production cost reasons, then you'll do okay.
Right.
And the same kind of thing happens in the theater, you know. What's the stage going to be like? What kind of set is it going to have? What is the power of the lighting? Who are you going to have as the main actors? I mean, all that's going to play a role.
Well, and I find that, I mean, I think books and movies are incredibly different entities. And a lot of people get upset because, oh, I read the book, and the book was so much better. And, you know, maybe sometimes that's true. Yeah, but the thing is I think sometimes if you were to translate the book exactly as it is onto the screen, it just wouldn't really work quite as well. I think that, you know, I mean, there are a few examples I can think of that where, you know, the author became really involved and insisted on certain things. And if you, I think you kind of have to understand that it's two very different things. And it sounds like you do, which is probably why, you know, the movie adaptations of your books are actually very good. I haven't seen, so My Sweet Audrina is a movie now, and I have not seen
that
yet, but I'm very excited. Yeah, right. Lifetime film, yeah. How do you feel about that? Is it? Are you happy with it?
I think some of the choices they made. There was one choice that I would have rather they did that they had not made, which was elimination of a character. But it doesn't really matter in the long run because I brought that character back in the sequel, which is out now, entitled White Fern. And whether or not the sequel will get made into a film is we don't know for sure. But I can tell you that we are developing a sixth V.C. Andrews novel for Lifetime, which is in Hollywood is quite a phenomenon. What we've done, my producer, Dan Angel of Everywhere Studios and myself, have been able to break through the wall, as we say, and we have gotten a network to do six straight films of one author. And that's quite an accomplishment right now in Hollywood because making movies, films, is getting more and more difficult simply because the studios are looking to do big blockbuster films. They need to draw huge audiences to pay the costs, and people are moving more to streaming. And what's hot right now is TV series. There are actually more markets for TV series. This is like the new golden age of television, if you want to know the truth, because the opportunity to develop a series from a novel is so much better for you than a movie. You can do so much more with your novel in an eight-part or 12-part series, limited series, than you could in a film. So it's very exciting for novelists to get their books into TV series.
Nice.
Yeah, so we'll see what comes of it. I mean, the next Lifetime film does well, then I'm sure it'll trigger something else. And in the meantime, we're out in the market with what we have waiting in the background. So there are other markets for us to go to.
So
I hate to talk about it like a piece of cheese, but basically, you know, I once had a Hollywood agent that said to me, Hollywood is basically a circus. Or television is basically a circus, and don't come in with all these highfalutin ideas because you're going to be in for a disappointment. And essentially, you know, I once spoke to a group in San Diego at a writers' conference, and I came out and I said, I'm going to tell them the truth today. And I came out and I said to them, the reason publishers publish your books is basically to make money. They have to make money.
Yeah,
and
sure.
If you don't face that fact, you're just going to be disappointed all the time. They have a big nut to crack, a publishing house, and they have people who have to answer to bosses as well. And if they pick books that don't make money, they don't last. So,
right.
You know, it's a hard knocks of it. If you want to write and don't care about making money, then don't care about being published. You know, write for
right.
yourself or whatever. But that's just the nature of it.
Right.
It's business. It's business. I'm excited though because White Fern is the sequel to My Sweet Audrina. Sweet Audrina is actually, I think it's the first V.C. Andrews book that I read because it was at the time not part of a series, and I wasn't sure if I'd like V.C. Andrews or not. Can you imagine? I love it now, but I wasn't sure. So this was years ago, and so I read it, and I always thought that it would be great to have more to it, to a sequel, and that is out now. Mm-hmm. What can you tell the listeners about White Fern?
Well, White Fern takes My Sweet Audrina 12 years ahead. It picks up 12 years ahead because a lot of the questions and a lot of the events that happened in My Sweet Audrina were left basically out there. And so White Fern picks up at that point, and we have an older Audrina now, much more mature, intelligent woman. And her sister, who, if you'll recall, is—I don't want to say she's slow-witted or anything. She's definitely trouble in the sense that she's disabled in so many ways. But she grows into a beautiful, beautiful woman, and she's like a child in a woman's body. And basically, what happens to her in White Fern sets us up for a very interesting turn and twist in the plot, and also involves Audrina's marriage to her childhood sweetheart, so to speak, Arden, and all the things that happened to her in her past come roaring back. One of the key set pieces in My Sweet Audrina was the rocking chair, this almost magical rocking chair. People who don't know the background of the book of My Sweet Audrina, a terrible thing happens to her when she's a child, and the family decides, rather than have her face up to it, they're going to pretend that she died and she's the new Audrina. So with that kind of psychological twist in the original story, you can imagine what kind of an effect that would have on someone growing up, especially when they discover that the grave they visit all the time of her sister is not really, there's no one in the grave. She's her sister. So it was quite a twist in My Sweet Audrina, and picking up on that, we have quite a few twists and turns to build, and I think it's an exciting plot for that reason. And it was a great deal of fun going back and investigating all these things and seeing how we could work them out 12 years later. So that's where White Fern is. It's on sale everywhere. It's got an interesting cover in that Simon & Schuster decided to make it a black and white cover. And so it stands out on the racks for that reason. It's one of the few black and white covers you're going to see out there.
Right,
it puts
right.
me in mind of the stills from, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. It has that look to it. I love it. It's so gothic. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, this of course this cover captures her going up a stairway, and the stairway leads to the rocking chair. So it's almost a kinetic view of what's going on, because you know that there's action ahead that's going to impact on this story quite a bit. And what happens in that rocking chair room is really important in White Fern, and I would hope. So I've gotten, you know, some people really love it. Some people just don't want to leave the first book. It's just the nature of the way it is, which I find interesting, of course. I think, but the very fact that V.C. Andrews as a book franchise is now probably the longest running book franchise that's consistently published for 36 years.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's incredible.
You're the author behind
Yeah, it's two to three books a year for the last 36 years. And I can tell you right now, I can tell you now that I've signed a new contract. I already have, but I have books that have to come out yet, But we'll see V.C. Andrews' novels on the racks and out there well through 2018.
Oh, that's great.
Nice. That is great.
And we've had a lot of comments from your first show last January from people who didn't realize that you are V.C. Andrews, that you've written most of the books. And that was kept under wraps for a very long time, wasn't it?
Well, people who are good readers, when they open the book, would have seen the disclaimer in the inside cover. That's the family has hired a writer to complete the works of E.C. Andrews.
Yeah.
So it was out there. It wasn't really – it's a fascinating story in and of itself. I've been doing V.C. Andrews now for 29 years. And have written over 80, actually.
Wow.
I mean, they're all not out yet, but it'll be over 80 books. The big thing that eventually exposed the fact that I was ghostwriting, ironically, was an IRS court case in Washington, D.C., when the estate sued the IRS to get back money that they had assigned to the V.C. Andrews franchise. What happened essentially is the IRS put a value on it and then taxed that value. And, of course, it was quite large.
Right.
So that became that was a fascinating law case because the result of it established a precedent that's used now in all kinds of cases involving estates and franchises and names. So that was all written up in the Washington Post, and I was a major witness in that case. So that was the beginning of it. But it didn't take hold as much as I thought it would until the last 5 or 6 years when you had like NPR interview me and BuzzFeed do a huge spread on it and all kinds of Fortune magazine chasing it down. So you had a lot of media on it because at that time you didn't see all this ghostwriting going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, the only ghostwriting that was happening when I started were writers who wrote movie star biographies. And the movie stars, it looked like they had written their own biography, but basically it was by a ghostwriter. And
right.
That was basically all there was. But once V.C. Andrews succeeded and continued to succeed, other publishers began to reinvent or bring back major authors. So today you have quite a few. And I like to think that I was the one who started it all.
Right. Yeah. And what a great thing to be a part of. I mean, this is you know, incredible. Do you still... Is it just, you know, another day of business, or do you occasionally realize, wow,
you realize it. You know, when you travel especially, that's when you realize it because, first of all, V.C. Andrews is in 95 countries, 27
right.
languages. And to see it in other places and when people know about it, it's really fun. And you could see that a good story will be a good story no matter what language it's in, what country it's in, as long as it's a good story and good characters. So that's so enjoyable to see that and to do that. A week from today, actually yesterday, today's Saturday, a week from yesterday I'm going to do a Comic-Con convention here in Palm Springs. And on the Friday at 8 o'clock, at the convention, I will be talking about the difference between Niederman or Niederman, whatever people pronounce my name, novels and the V.C. Andrews book. It's really funny. My own family pronounces it two ways. My family comes from Philadelphia, where they call it Niederman, but where I grew up in New York, we're known as Niederman.
What do you say?
In
now,
Europe, they call me Mr. Niederman, so I kind of think that's it. Anyway, so that's what I'm going to do Friday at Comic-Con, 8 o'clock. And then on Saturday, I'm going to run a panel on how to write, what goes into writing a horror terror novel. featuring the Devil's Advocate. So that's,
I would love to hear. I would love to hear a little bit about the difference between Niederman and C.C. Andrews' writing.
Yeah,
there's
quite a bit of
like?
Difference because, I mean, just on a basic general way, my books under my name are going to be a lot more graphic and edgy than the V.C. Andrews novels are. But the V.C. Andrews novels are pushing the envelope as we get, you know, as it gets older and we move further ahead. One of the challenges for somebody writing, ghostwriting an author, is basically what would that author be doing if he or she was still doing it? You know, what would the events of the current period, how would that affect this author or anybody for that matter? Because we all change and develop and we all expand. I mean, if you write one novel and you write the same, you know, you write that novel over and over again the same way, you're not going to go anywhere. So there's got to be some growth. There's got to be some, you know, new awareness. And that's what the challenge is for me with V.C. Andrews.
You have written as yourself all along beside V.C. Andrews.
I have 46 Niederman thrillers.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Wow. It is.
I just realized, Alistair and I say wow an awful lot. We have to watch that.
We do. And,
you say swell. You used to use that word in the old days.
Okay.
Well, that's
swell.
Wow.
Yeah. Swell.
Right.
That's just swell.
I don't really think about it. You know, I could be honest with you. I mean, once in a while I do. But people ask me about it. I always refer myself to a tightrope walker. I say what you got to do is continue to look forward. If you look down and see how high up you are, you're going to fall.
Right.
So basically forget about it. Just work.
Good advice.
Yep.
Yes.
And, if you get enamored of yourself, you're finished. It's over.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, I just enjoy the work. I have a passion for it. Mm-hmm. It's still fun for me. I love meeting people and talking about the stories and more about the work of writing. I love to see things developed in other medium. It's very exciting to be developing a musical. It's very exciting to be doing a play, and it's always exciting to be doing a film.
Oh yeah.
Before we talk about the incident, I wanted to ask what it was like for you writing librettos. Well, a libretto instead of manuscripts.
Well, you know, libretto is basically same as a play, except you have to set up scenes expecting where the music's going to be and where you can break out in songs. So you've got to prepare for that. In a libretto, and musicals, if you notice, move quickly with sets, whereas a play usually, you know, more often than not is in a single set. That's why Flowers in the Attic works as a play, by the way, because everything takes place in the attic. But you could have, you do have my, you know, other scenes off the main set in Flowers in the Attic, but it lent itself to a play because it takes place in one set. One setting. A musical, you're going to have many settings. People love productions. You know, in a musical, production quality is most important. And that's why we're happy about South Korea, by the way. It's now the world's third biggest producers of stage musicals. And they have a lot of money, and they do a big job, and they're like Broadway theater, with theaters as big as Broadway, and all the production values as good as Broadway. So that's pretty exciting. And that's why your libretto has to reflect that. You know, you have to think about that. As far as the incident goes, which is the novel I have out now, this is an example of how a writer, I always say, can go home again. You know, Thomas Wolfe wrote, "You can never go home again." And I know what he meant. You know, all of us know he meant when you go back, everything is different. It's changed. And it is. Especially in my home area is completely changed. It used to be a major resort area with many hotels, small hotels, bungalow colonies. It's where entertainers got their start in the business. It was a very exciting place to grow up. And all that died, and there are no really big hotels anymore, and they're trying to revive it in certain ways. But the towns... If you remember a movie called entitled The Last Picture Show.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of what the towns look like in some places of my area. You know, where the movie marquee says, "See you next summer, forever." Basically, it's hard to go back to that and live with the memories that were so vibrant. But I am very lucky in that I'm an author and a writer, and I can envision the past. And so in the incident, I have it set in the Catskills in a small village when the resort area was booming. And it was an exciting place, especially, I mean, in the summer. You had big influx of New York people, New York City people. My township of seven hamlets had a population of 7,500 people, and in the summer it went over 500,000. So you have an idea what it was like. I mean, during the rest of the year, your dog could lie in the middle of the street and have a very comfortable rest. But in the summer, it was just, it was booming, you know, with lots of traffic and people and lots of excitement. And in the midst of that world, I developed a story about a teenage girl who is ruthlessly attacked one night and has a, in that time in the 1950s, such an attack, sexual attack, was rare. So the way people react to the victim is interesting, and how it affects her life is fascinating. But she goes on to go to college, and then as our story begins, she's returning to this little town after graduating college. And the people who did this to her have never been caught. And so there's a heavy kind of thriller aspect to it, but there's also a new romance for her waiting. So in the mix of all that, with the great booming Catskill world, we have The Incident, which is out now. If you know, you can get it on Amazon, easily, whatever. Yeah.
Just came out, and you did something really interesting in The Incident very well. And right after Alistair does the break, I want to bring that up.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. Let me just take a moment to remind the listeners that this is Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live, where your hosts, Alistair Cross and Tamara Thorne. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, which are alistaircross.com and tamarathorne.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handle is @thorncross. Be sure to visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/thornandcross. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. If you're listening online, please click the follow button. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. Also, the latest Thorn and Cross novel, a psychological thriller titled Mother, is available now in ebook and paperback wherever books are sold. I also want to let you know that our gothic horror novel, The Ghosts of Ravencrest, is on sale for 99 cents in ebook at Amazon starting Monday. And the sale goes through Saturday, August 27th. So it starts Monday and Saturday for 99 cents. We write this as a serialized installment, as well as, you know, the full volume coming out once the story arc is complete. The fourth installment of The Witches of Ravencrest will be available sometime next week. We're very happy with that. Anyway, that being said, back to our show.
Yes. You very frequently right from female viewpoint, and you do it very well. But in The Incident, one of the things that struck me was how well you tackled rape, a rape victim, and how she felt. How do you get into that headset?
Well, as Shakespeare said, it's a mystery.
Oh, okay.
I think I think one of the characteristics that you have as a writer is the ability, you must have the ability to empathize as opposed to sympathize. You have to be able to move into characters and to live through their eyes. Why? My first novel was from a female point of view, Sisters, the first thing I ever published. There was just a viewpoint that I wanted to achieve. And I've always, you know, been always fascinated with how other people see things in the world. And probably for a man, there's no more fascinating thing than to see how a woman views the world. And I have a lot of help for the details from my wife. But basically, you know, I do a lot of research, obviously, for some of this. But it's just basically an empathy thing. I think you just get into it and imagine it. Imagine you are that person. And if you do it well enough, you'll convince the reader. And that's where it's at. Now, that might be the area that you inherit, or if you want to talk about it in those terms. Mm-hmm. When people ask me about it, I always tell them, to be successful, you have to be at least 40% with perseverance. Because you could be talented, but if you don't have that perseverance, you're just not going to go forward.
Yeah.
You're going to give up. So basically, a lot of people are talented. Many people are talented. Most people have something. And they never develop it because they don't have the passion or the perseverance. So basically, that's the driver. And in her case, I just envisioned that whole world, envisioned it at a time when it was rare, and envisioned what her difficulties were beyond the painful attack. Because when people look at you, you know, I grew up at a time when it was very rare to see a divorce, matter of fact. And I remember when I was a young boy in a small town, and there was a woman who had a divorce, and how everybody would kind of look at her and say, that's the woman who had a divorce. And it was so, you know, rare. And so when you think about that today, you laugh. But it's that kind of thing, you know. So unfortunately, in our country especially, well, no, I shouldn't say only in ours, you know, it's worse in India. When a girl is raped, the whole view of her changes, which is not fair. I mean, she's a victim.
No.
It's not fair. And basically what she's battling in the incident is this view of her. And so when her new love affair comes about and it's with somebody significant in the community, it's a huge thing. They help to wipe out everything, in a sense, except there's a mystery behind that too. So, I mean, that's the way I go about it.
It's fascinating, and you do it so well. I've always been more intimidated writing women than men. Men are easier to get into for me. And
so there you go.
Fascinating. Yeah, it's bad.
Maybe
women,
it's too personal sometimes.
Yeah,
maybe, but I'm kind of a guy, you know. My husband calls himself the wife.
What do you find the most difficult to write, Andrew? Is there something that trips you up or that you find difficult?
No, not per se. I mean, first of all, I don't start something that I think is going to, that I don't feel something for it. I mean, I've started many stories and then realized maybe a little while into the story that I don't really have a passion for the story. And so maybe that's the difficult thing. But I'd rather walk off of that than stick with it and write something that I don't think is worthwhile. So you've got to have a passion. It's got to drive you all the time. And if you're driven by the story and the characters, there's nothing difficult. I mean, everything is going to come the way it's supposed to. But I think what's difficult for me is somebody telling me, I want you to write this story, which is really their story. And that happens a lot when you're publishing a lot. People will come to you and say, I've got a story for you. I got your next story. Or you get things in emails or mails where people say, would you write my story? You know, and you tell them, it's not my story. It's your story. You write it. You know?
Exactly.
That's basically what you have to say. And you have to start it yourself. It's got to be yours. Mm-hmm. Now, people in Hollywood are different because they're looking for somebody else's story. You very rarely run into people in the movie industry who start with the creative germ itself and develop something like that. I have had producers who said, I like what you're doing. Could you do this? And then you look at it and you try it, but then you realize it's not really mine and there's no passion for it. So that's what happens. I would say it's the same for actors who are thrown things and told, you know, we'll give you a lot of money to do this. They look at it and they realize this isn't who I am. I can't play this part. And those are good actors. Those are actors that that means something to them, what they do, you know.
Passion's everything.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's probably true for everything in life, but certainly very true for the creative arts.
Now, how about if you have an editor that says, oh, could you write a book about, oh, summer camp? I just, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
With something that broad, I found that I could do that.
You know, if they throw something at you that you can develop yourself, that's a different story.
Yes.
You know, they say, I once had, this is really right to the point. One of my earliest meetings in Hollywood, I remember, was with a producer, and I think at that time I had about 20 novels under my name. And I had 20 novels with 20 different stories. And I came in to see him, and he said, what do you have? And I said, what do you want? And he looked at me and said, no one's ever asked me that. What they do is sit behind a desk, and you throw storylines at them. And if something interests them, they'll go further into it. But to ask them to tell you what they want, that's really difficult. I pushed them on it hard. And finally he said, well, we're looking for a woman in Jeopardy, which was a very
that's
popular
fraud.
One time. Woman in Jeopardy.
Yeah.
So then my challenge now is to think of my stories and say, in which story do I have a woman in jeopardy? And then I can come back at them.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to be boxed in like that, though. That's not what they want.
Oh,
right.
They want you to give them a smorgasbord, and then they pick up something from it or not.
So that
gives you an idea of how the creative thing happens.
Yeah.
In that world.
In your years of experience, do you feel that you're able to, read something or write something and say, this would really work. This is something people, the producers and the audience would be interested in, or is it just kind of hit and miss?
When you say really work, you mean something they give me?
Yeah, something that they would be interested in.
Well, if they're interested in it, then you're way ahead of the game to start with, because they're committed to this. Now your job is to get to come up with something that's interesting to you, and at the same time stays with what they want. And if you can do that, then you might be able to move forward. But as we're speaking, there are probably something like 80,000. Screenplays going on right now where people are submitting or people have written.
Yes.
And maybe 12 will be done. So it does seem to be a mystery. And also you watch things on television and you say, how could that have been made? How could anybody have seen this as a something to make? And you are amazed, and you just say, well, there are so many elements that come into play that make a movie. And if an actor or a producer or somebody with money wants to do something, it could be done. It'll be done. And it won't have anything to do with the quality of the work. And that's the sad part, but that's the reality, too.
Right.
So what you've got to do is try to navigate that and see if you can, get into it on it. That's what you do. I do both.
So,
I mean, very few writers actually go into Hollywood and pitch stories. But I've always enjoyed doing it. And I have many, many funny experiences doing it. And I've had stories that were bought on the moment and then somehow died the next day. I mean, because the person who bought it, it might have been, I don't know, on something at the time. Who knows? And then they have to present it to somebody else, and they say, "What are you thinking of? We can't do that, and we're not prepared to do that, or we don't have the money for that." So, you know,
right.
Yeah, that's really hard.
Yeah, it's a, but that's like, to me, it's fun and it's also interesting. You know, mm-hmm. I get frustrated like everybody else, but then I think I had a great agent once in Hollywood whose reaction to rejection was one word. Whenever a script or a project was rejected, he looked at me and he said, "Next."
Ah, yep.
I love it.
Because
yep.
Yeah, well, obviously what he was saying was, don't, you know, start agonizing over it. It's over and done with. Move on. Go. We'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
We'll try something else. Don't do that. And that's
right.
The best advice you can give. Next.
Right.
That's very good advice. Yeah.
So
next for me is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
You know, I do have the musical. I do have the play. We will have a new series starting in October called The Mirror Sisters with V.C. Andrews.
Oh, nice.
That's a three-book series. So I'm very excited about it. It's very edgy.
Comes out in October?
I believe it's October 25th, but I have to... You change. I think at the end of White Fern, there's a teaser for it, so that people will be able to see it in the White Fern. But they just have to go to Simon & Schuster, V.C. Andrews, and they get the whole schedule of books. There are those three, and then at the end of 2018, there's a new series starting with a book called The House of Secrets. So that's all done, and that's all mm-hmm. in the works. And now being sold worldwide.
Oh, great. Is that V.C. Andrews?
Yeah, that's V.C. Andrews. That's why I say it'll go on.
How about you?
Through 2018, actually through 2019.
Nice. What about the Niederman books? Do you have any what's up next for Niederman?
Well, I've been concentrating on the musical and the play, so I have it. But I'm working on a new novel now with my agent in New York, and... I have a couple of things on the board here that I'm working on. It's just now I'm at a point where I got to find time. but I'm not pressured by it because I'm really excited about the play and the musical now. I think it's really important to continually reinvent yourself. And mm-hmm. For me, theater has always been the most attractive thing. I love theater more than I do film. I love live theater, so I'm very excited about both projects, and I want to do all I can to make them happen.
Right.
And we're positive the musical is going to happen. It's just a matter of me rewriting the play now for the play.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I have a kind of a strange question that I've always been curious about, and I have never had the chance to ask. Is there within you any competition between the Niederman books and the V.C. Andrews book?
Competition? No, because as I say, I'm going to talk on Friday, a week from yesterday, at the Comic-Con convention in Palm Springs about the differences between those two. They're vastly different. So there's no competition. In the early days, I used to write on two computers. One computer was for the Niederman novels, and then I would turn my chair and write the V.C. Andrews novels.
Yeah.
A whole persona. Yeah, it was quite strange. Now I have a setup that is just technologically incredible. I mean, I have three screens. I can do research on one, manuscript on the other, email on another, and basically I can write both books on the same computer. But when I write a V.C. Andrews novel, I'm in a totally different personality, totally different persona. So it's not that they're competing. I mean, it really is like apples and oranges because they're different markets. There's a different readership in that regard that goes with it. Although the V.C. Andrews readership now is so vast because being 36 years old, you can imagine if somebody was 20, 25 at those first books, you have grandmothers reading the novels, and you also have teenagers reading them. So there are very few authors that have that kind of demographic, but because of the longevity of the V.C. Andrews franchise, it has that demographic.
Which
you would think would appeal to every Hollywood producer in the world, but unfortunately, not many of them read.
Yeah.
They depend on other people to do coverage and stuff. And so I've walked into producers' offices and pitched a V.C. Andrews novel, and I'd never heard of it. V.C. Andrews.
Oh.
Wow, that's incredible.
That's amazing.
What world do you live in?
I know, right? Seriously.
Yeah.
I remember
V.C.
Andrews. I saw it for the first time when I was in like fourth grade. It was all over the place. Is there a book, mm-hmm. whether it's a Niederman book or a V.C. Andrews book, that you would love to see in film? I mean, really, really love to see it and just have not been able to make it happen.
Yeah, I have one. I'm working tentatively. I'm waiting to see. I'll be working with a producer on a book of mine, a novel of mine called The Need, in which I created an entirely new terror character, the androgyny. They are women who metamorphose into men and then hunt women.
Wow.
That's
interesting.
It's a whole underclass that lives among us. There's nothing about them that is distinguishable. In fact, they're usually beautiful people. The main character is a famous model, and no one would ever know that she undergoes this metamorphosis. So we're trying now to develop it as a TV series called Tales of the Androgyny. And I had it optioned for a movie three times. It was in the script by a very famous author, and it just didn't get the second stage, the third stage. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to make that happen.
That sounds great.
That sounds great.
Just read that book immediately.
Yeah, it's called The Need.
That sounds fantastic.
The Need,
I will be ordering that from Amazon today. Yes.
That sounds fantastic.
It's very creepy sounding.
It is.
Yeah,
it
it's
is.
A fun I book. It. I mean, and you have to realize the Bible tells us that God was we were created in God's image. Well, God is not a man. God is not a woman. He has to be an androgyny.
Yeah.
Right.
Or androgynous.
Right.
So I create a whole new mythology in the book.
Nice. That's always good timing.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. And, of course, it's an interesting character. I don't want to give it away if you're going to read it, but, you know, there's an interesting, whole interesting event that occurs when they go after someone. It's different.
Yes. Going to read it. It instantly puts me in mind of incubi, succubi type stuff, too, since they're sort of androgynous. And maybe that's the creepy vibe. So.
Yeah,
I've got it up on Amazon. I'll be ordering that. It's very appealing.
Is there a book, a story that you've always really wanted to tell that you haven't gotten around to or haven't had a chance to?
Yes. There's a book. I kind of keep thinking that's the book I'll do when I retire from most everything else because it's huge. You know, it's basically a story of where I came from in the Catskills and development of the hotels. And it starts in Europe and moves on from there. So it's a big, big project. And
sounds wonderful.
You know, I've got some of it done, but I know to do it, I have to really have devote all my time to it totally.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm not going to start then until I'm ready to start.
Would it be, is it kind of like, is it like autobiography?
No, not autobiography. It's got its own plot, but it's got a lot of history in it. And as my area did have, it was fascinating. I mean, the way it got settled, you know, the way the people came up there in the early 20th century, the way the hotels developed, way the mafia came into it, and what their impact was, and. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of elements. It's like as big as the Godfather type thing.
Right, right.
Yeah, I was reading about the history of the Catskills this morning, the tuberculosis place.
Yes,
I can't remember
at one
name.
Point,
there
was a haven for that, especially a place called Liberty Falls, they called it. And the girls that took care of everybody were known as the Fresh Air Girls. And actually, a famous hotel, Grossinger's, didn't want to be associated with that. So what they did was they got the United States government to give them a post office called Grossinger's New York.
Oh.
And that all came about because they wanted to avoid being associated with tuberculosis.
Yeah.
You know, who wants to go to a hotel if it's associated with tuberculosis?
Right.
Of course, Grossinger's became a gigantic hotel and very famous with acting, actor, everybody. I mean, Elizabeth Taylor was married there with Eddie Fisher.
Oh.
There were so many different... Wow. You know, celebrities there. I wrote a novel with one of the relatives of Grossinger's, Tanya Grossinger. The novel's called Weekend, about a Catskill hotel.
Oh, nice.
It
was a fascinating area. It just needs to be, you know, people to be focused on it a little bit, that's all.
Yeah.
Yes, I tour that area now, see the old places.
We are just about out of time. Before we let you go, could you tell the listeners, you know, where they can go to find out more about you and what you do and where your stuff is available, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, well, as I say, I'm going to be at the – if you're anywhere near Palm Springs, I'm going to be at the Comic-Con Friday, 8 o'clock, and then Saturday at 11. My books are all the books are on Amazon, of course, but they're published by different publishers. And it's easiest probably just to go to that central location for the novels. I will my Facebook page. There's a VC Andrews Facebook page, authentic Facebook page, and then there's Andrew Nyman author Facebook page, and I post news on it almost every day, and they'll be able to see what's happening and keep track of it all, and I'll let everybody know about the play and the musical as it goes along on those pages.
Right.
And I'm aware of media and play it the way you're supposed to, so everybody will know the news as it happens. I would say go there, go to those places. If you haven't joined my author's page, you know, I welcome you to join it. And if you're interested in VC Andrews, it's approaching 145,000. It's a fascinating page. Usually it's 10, 15, 20,000 a day. Commenting.
It's called VC Andrews fan page because there's more than one.
Yeah, the authentic VC Andrews fan page, you'll see. Bittersweet Dreams headliner on it, so you'll be able to see that and go
great
there.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, thank you for being on the show. You are, you know, welcome back anytime, and we'll definitely be in touch when your next one comes out. You are always a pleasure to have on the show.
Yes.
And, thank you.
We love you.
Well,
we
it's
do
a pleasure
love
to be
you.
With you, and I'll keep you guys in the loop, no question.
All right, all right. And for those listening, we don't have any music tonight, but thank you for joining us. We've been talking to Andrew Nyderman, a.k.a. VC Andrews. There are two new books available, one under Andrew Nyderman, called another one under VC Andrews, which is White Fern, and that is the long-awaited sequel to My Sweet Audrina. Those are available now. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights
and sweet screams.
Thank you for joining us. I won't
good play
night. Music because we don't
bye
have
bye.
Any.
No.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
There we go.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.